The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and welcome back. We go off into the Twilight Zone again tonight with the Pickering Brothers. We're going to take our third look at this remarkably unusual and unique and strange story that we have been covering for the last two Tuesdays. Welcome back, Sean, first of all. How are you?
I'm doing great. Wrestling a little with a cold, so I'll try to keep the phone away.
No, yes, those things can spread through telephonic communication. I get it. don't breathe on me, for God's sakes.
I don't breathe on you.
Clay, how are you?
I'm doing well, and I think Sean gave me what he has, so we've both been dealing with it. But
I'm patient zero.
What are brothers for, huh? let me take this moment to drop in a very rare commercial, a little quickie. On the site, all of you know about Allison C. And I would urge, in fact, I would implore all of you to get at least three bottles and have them at home. Take one capsule a day as a preventive to keep your immune system up. That will go through your entire body and root out and destroy things that aren't supposed to be there. I started to get that flu, and I stopped it in a day and a half. I had one other person, the same thing. Patty Doyle got very sick. She was able to take six and then ten at bedtime, five more at bedtime. Next morning, she was much better. This flu is not a joke. It's not a normal flu. It often combines with meningitis, which can be quite fatal. So don't play games. Allison C. is an extraordinary natural gift, one of the most powerful antibiotics ever, if not the most. So don't discount it, and please protect yourselves. Allison C. All right, guys, thank you. Now, we are going to rejoin the story where? Let's bring everybody up to speed and step forward and proceed. Clay, you go ahead.
Actually, what I'll do, I'll let Sean go ahead there.
All right, Sean, got the timeline. You go ahead.
Yeah, we're at the August 3rd, 08 timeline where it's the first time we see Richard when he comes back. We end up meeting at a brewing company that abuts the Hudson River,
right,
which no longer exists. I found that yesterday. And we meet Richard.
You mean the Hudson River is gone now?
No, the brewery company is gone.
Just kidding.
I wouldn't mind the Hudson River going. The brewery company really bothered me.
Got it.
So, So we meet him for the first time, and he looks good.
How long after his return from the first mission would this be approximately?
He got back 6:30, June 30th. Then he was at a base for a while. Then he came back to Washington, D.C. And that was the July time frame where they were at B and FD.
Yeah.
And then 7/21/08, he goes off the state. We still haven't seen him yet. And then eventually he comes back into New York City August 3rd, 08. That's the first time we've seen him.
So that's June 30th to August 3rd.
Correct.
Right.
So we have a meeting, you know, and he...
How does he look? How does he look? For our listeners who have been with us, he's got this big device in his chest, which I assume was removed. He's been through a lot. This is a real physical challenge, especially for somebody who has a permanent injury and a heart condition. He looks good.
Right. He looks good, you know.
All right.
An alleged heart condition. So I noticed that his hair was, you know, about, you know, regular length. And I said to himself, well, didn't you tell us that, you know, all the hair burned out, blah, 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 blah. And he said, yes, but they gave us this yellow gelatinous substance, which we were injected with, that created accelerated healing and hair growth. He says, believe it or not, I've had two haircuts since I've been back. The side effect of the particular drug is a deep, deep, deep depression, and it hit the female member the hardest.
Emily.
Yes.
And we've named her.
This kind of depression was pretty much in place for a few months. It just did not go away. And we noticed it in his behavior. At that point, when we meet and we eat and we're talking, Clay says, well, let me see your scar. So he goes, okay. So we walked out of the room into an area. It kind of reminds me of like a chamber, like an area before you walk into a hotel, but there was nobody there. So he opens his shirt, and you could see the scar. And it didn't look like I've seen people with open heart. It didn't look as invasive. It didn't go all the way up to his. Correct me if I'm wrong, Clay. It didn't go all the way up to his
collarbone
throat. Did it? Collarbone.
So it went. To the sternum, to the top of the belly button, about an inch and a half. But it still was an invasive zipper.
So it went down. It went down from the sternum, not up toward the throat.
Nope.
No, yes or no, no?
I know nothing about, about medicine, so I really didn't know what I was looking at, you know, because I've never had open heart.
But the scar went, when you saw it, the scar went down to the belly button. That's what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay, all right.
Correct.
That's correct. And so we actually at that point took pictures of it. And then we got into, you know, where Rich was going to go and do. I'm not quite sure at this point. When he got back, he was still on the payroll of state, whether he was now released back to the private sector. I can't recollect where he was drawing pay.
Mm-hmm.
But connected to his trip, we learned that his parish was informed through prayer literature that Richard had gone through a heart operation. So a couple researchers we knew looked into this, which we didn't want them to go too quickly, and they did. And the pastor of the church got really nervous, and he said he didn't want to talk to anyone anymore. He closed down discussions immediately. And this happened in September 16th, 08.
Okay, now hold on. A couple of researchers got too vigorous about asking the church about the heart surgery? That's what you're saying?
Correct. Correct. We wanted to validate whether or not there were witnesses, people
uh-huh.
that visited in the hospital.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing we were able to verify is that there was prayer literature saying that we hope Richard gets well. He's
right.
gone through heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And so... the researchers who were, I would describe them as aggressive skeptics, which is good. We were fine with that, but we wanted them to go at a pace where we didn't, you know, close it down too quickly. there's ways of going about this where people don't get nervous. And they went too hard, and the pastor got nervous, and he didn't want to talk to anyone. He pulled away, which Clay and I thought pretty odd. Clay, you want to add anything?
Yeah, let me add a couple things. When Rich came back and we met him and we took the pictures, that pictures happened a little bit later with another researcher. We'll go back to the original get together after he got back from his mission, but I want to just add that researcher is not a researcher in ufology whatsoever. This researcher is a very top researcher in the particular field that he engages in. He was with me when I took those pictures. I have those pictures. I have given those pictures to my intel contacts, who understands medicine and understands the very nature of the programs, or at least some of the things that he's been engaged in. And he said, this zipper is too invasive. And zipper, folks, from the top of the sternum to the top of the belly button. And he said, we don't do this procedure anymore. So obviously, he was absolutely, our intel guy, was absolutely perplexed by the very nature of the scar. Keep that in mind.
Who's an MD?
Yeah. Okay.
But remember, the surgery was performed by off-planet intelligences here on the planet in their own craft. So who's he to question? I don't get it. It's not his business.
He's trying to decide for himself whether or not this core story that we're presenting to him is legit.
So he knew the basics.
He's a skeptic.
He knew the story. Okay.
Yes.
I sat across from him. Go ahead, John.
No, go ahead.
I sat across from him the following day after we met him for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And I remember he was looking at the pictures, and he looked at me with his perplexed expression, like, "This is not in keeping with heart surgery."
Right.
And he found that he couldn't prove it because he's not a heart surgeon, but he knew that it was invasive, and that that he didn't recognize that particular type of procedure considering the length of the scar.
Okay. But he knew this HERE device was implanted in that location, right?
He knew the story.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, he did. And we'll say it again: a human environment range extender. Well, let's be very clear to the people out there, Jeff, that sometimes the intelligence agencies or the black programs will use an acronym. Go and look on the internet of a HERE unit. And by the way, there is such thing as a human element range extender, and essentially that is a receptacle for pilots who cannot move around, for instance, in the cockpit of the SR-71 Blackbird, who have to urinate. You can't move, so you urinate in a particular receptacle. That is also called a HERE unit. But it's not uncommon, as I understand it, that to use the same initials and be able to describe a unit. But the important thing is the unit was installed in that chest.
Okay.
And I clarified that recently, that it was a human environment range extender. So it's I want to kind of give you folks a little bit of an idea that there was a unit in place.
Okay, good. Now we're sitting at the table with the pastor and, the doctor,
nope.
And somebody with medical knowledge.
Pastor.
Right.
We were not. The pastor was not sitting at the table.
Said doctor.
Oh, I thought you said pastor.
No, the pastor was the one involved with the information
to
the church parishioners. Okay, go ahead. So
Correct.
The doc is at
Correct.
The table. The pastor is irrelevant. However, the pastor refused to participate with researchers who had questions. That's what you mentioned earlier, correct? All right.
That's correct.
Very good.
And that happened on September 16th, 08.
All right. Go ahead. So the device is out. The zipper is there. The doctor's perplexed. He doesn't get it. He's never seen anything like that. That location, that whatever. He knew it was invasive deeply, but he couldn't put his fingers on it any more than that.
So from 08 to mid 09, we're in the process of A, getting some of the information out that Rich wants us to get out, The other part of that time period is trying to validate exactly Rich's story.
And what so, does, okay, what
Sean,
does
Sean,
yeah,
on,
Clay
guys.
First, then I got a question. Go ahead, Clay.
Okay, hold on, guys, because, you know, this is the problem. And I ask our listeners to be very patient because there's so much secondary and tertiary information with each particular meeting or event. But our guy got back after the first time. We met him for the first time. He sat down with us and he said, hi, guys. And we got a chance to just talk a little bit about the program, where he, what he did. Mind you, nothing classified was ever passed to us. He told us from the beginning, he said, listen, I'm expecting a phone call. So just when that call comes in, just be still and quiet. That phone call came in. And I'll paraphrase, and I'll give you a little bit of background. He answers the call. This is Rich. And he says, yes, sir. Yes, sir, they're here with me now. Yes, sir, I understand. Very good. Very good. Yes, sir. I understand. Okay. Thank you. Rich hangs up, and I say to him, I said, hey, I've never heard you so deferential to authority before. If you know Rich, he is a hippie in a Navy uniform that can respect authority. I don't know how to explain it any more than that. But he is not. He's old Navy, and the younger Navy guys who have not been tried and tested, it doesn't earn his respect immediately. However, this particular guy, he earned the respect of immediately. I could hear it in the tone of his voice and how he addressed the gentleman.
Gotcha.
So I said to him, I said, hey, I never heard you speak to an admiral that way. And he said, not an admiral, a general. I go, wow. He goes, a 3-star. And we subsequently learned, actually, I figured that out. Well, Sean and I did later, about 2 years later, that same general, I won't name names, got his 4-star when he became the CSS director for the United States Forces. This guy is the top of the cryptological food chain. That's who called.
All right.
I was blown away by that.
It sounded like he called to find out if you, in fact, had kept a meeting with Richard, and you were there, and he was acknowledging that.
It was more to remind Rich to be careful about any classified information that was passed. He was giving Richard permission to share elements of the story about what he was engaged in the program. Remember, and I say this to listeners, whether you believe it or not, to some degree, Sean and I were vetted in to at least to be mouthpieces to push forth this particular type of program. One, the Disclosure Confirmation Initiative, the UN. And then later, when he was moved from that, Rich, to the Extraterrestrial Liaison Project, Black Program, SAP, that he was engaged in and that we had a chance, we first saw him after he came back after Offworld.
So very good. Okay, now, Sean, you mentioned that some of the information, I'm paraphrasing you, that Rich wanted us to get out. Mm-hmm. What information did he want you to get out? Why did he want you to put it out? And through what means were you supposed to put it out?
Well, I'll answer the last question first. We basically put it out on Open Minds Forum. It was a blog that had a lot of talent on there, so we felt it was probably the best of, other than Top Secret, the one I think Lear was part of, Above Top Secret. We didn't go with Above Top Secret, we went with Open Minds Forum.
And the reason why we did that, sorry to interrupt you, Sean, is that Michael Sala and Robert Morningstar were participating in that, and they were the most friendly, and we got the most astute dealing with ufology, so to speak, and also they had just come off the heels of the SERPO program. So they were incredibly interested in this particular program, and they were very receptive. So that is the reason why we went over there.
Right.
MUFON had asked
They wanted to decide.
At one point.
They wanted to,
and MUFON had asked
they
us at one point.
Not,
go on, Sean.
They wanted to decide whether or not there were two distinct programs or some sort of cross-pollination between SERPO and this.
All right. Now, what type of information did Richard want you to disseminate on his behalf?
His experience, what he went through, leaving out places, leaving out sources, methods, places.
Names, yeah.
Names. And also the design or the intent of what this particular ET race was interested in us. It was more of a kind of acclimation program to get people familiar with this particular ET race.
All right. We have to assume that the 3-star, now 4-star, maybe 5 by now, who knows, general who talked to Rich was fully aware of this and sanctioned it, as you said, and wanted this information put out there.
Correct.
All right,
absolutely,
go ahead.
Correct.
Very good. All right, go ahead. Thank you for answering that.
I'm going to present a block of time,
uh-huh.
And then within this block of time, there were various instances. From 08 to 09, we were involved in blogging all this information out to Open Minds Forum, and that in turn created a lot of interaction between ourselves, the blog itself, and even Richard himself. Richard had, through us, had presented information on there.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that Richard wanted Open Minds Forum to understand is how budgets work, how people are paid, that he wanted people to understand the financial machinations of how black programs work.
Why?
Because
they have as much money as they need. Everybody knows that. He makes it sound like they're adhering to a strict budget.
Understand, the acclimation program is to get the secondary and tertiary levels of bureaucracies ready if there is going to be contact. Now, people have to get paid.
There was contact.
Program. So during our blogging, people go, well, how did they get paid? Well, who's going to do this? And so you start getting into that minutia about how Richard worked this out. And so it was an education program of how really the national security state really works.
All right.
Okay.
And you guys were doing an awful lot of writing and typing, weren't you?
Yes, a lot. A hell of a lot.
Yeah.
Now, during this time, we also meet our intel friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that opened an opportunity for us to validate because this intel friend had clearances. So that was a process unto itself. Jumping just to the spring of 09, we actually had accompanied Richard onto an undisclosed military base for a casual event, and we witnessed Richard pull out his CAC card and enter, and there was absolutely no problem. He was in his spring khakis.
And so you guys were just civvies.
We're going to be part of the casual event.
Mm-hmm. Is that the picture? Clay, is that the photos that you sent me that we posted last time?
That's a Navy League meeting, and if we ever get there. But I want to make this one point, too, is that subsequently, when our Navy guy, Rich, finally met our intel source, lo and behold, they found out they shared the same admiral in the black programs, but different SAPs. And for folks out there, an SAP is a special access program.
Got it.
Now, I'm going to bring this up too. That same admiral is also in charge or is a contact to Tom DeLonge.
All right, the DeLonge thing, for people who don't know, give us a quick explanation about that, who Tom DeLonge is. He's in entertainment, and why you think he may have been selected to be a conduit.
I'll try to do the best on here. I suspect, first of all, Tom has the means, that's the finances, to be able to move around and go meet these people. So, ergo, those who want to meet Tom are not paying for it, as far as I understand. They're not paying for his trip, so there's no paper trail. So Tom, on his own dime, I think Tom has some money, obviously, from Blink 182, his days, being in the rock band, has made it a mission to go out and see these people, and that affords a degree of comfort for those in the black world that they don't have to pay for it, or there's no sort of paper trail that would be able to point in the direction that Tom is seeing them in case something blows up and they have to go into failsafe. Tom has been interested in the subject of the UFO phenomena. By the way, I say UFO slash phenomena. And that he has made it a life's mission to go out there and try to find out exactly what this is. And he has been introduced to, I suspect, some of the same players, at least in the intelligence end of things, maybe some in the intelligence, some in the private sector. And I don't know in the Navy, because we were primarily involved with those in the Navy program, and right. that he is moving forward the disclosure confirmation process, which should have happened in 2013. Our original timeline had said 2013 was the year that things would should have happened. I remember talking about that.
Right.
And the heating up was part of the disclosure confirmation process, we strongly suspect. And contact, unambiguous contact, which we were told by elements of the Navy, by brass, very high up, 2017. That did not come to pass. However, it's interesting, and I know I'm getting ahead, we have a large asteroid, Oumuamua, show up, and the media, sometimes they do something right, the mainstream media, they say, hey, is that an extraterrestrial spaceship? And what's interesting, I'm only inferring here, I can't say it's actually an asteroid, if it's artificial or not, but they make the inference that, hey, you know, is that a spaceship? And interestingly, Rich has always said that their ships look like rocks.
All right, this particular asteroid looks like a cigar, all right? It's that shape. And it looks pitted. It looks like a typical deep space intersolar system traveler. And give us a little bit more on this. What else do we want to think about this thing being a ship of some kind? Anything else you can share?
Yeah, the only thing I can share about that is that that's exactly, Rich has spoken to us. They have a scout ship, an intermediary ship, and a very large celestial, or call it a celestial object that's circular, somewhat circular. It's about half the size of Phobos.
Okay.
And we suspect that's hanging out around the Kuiper Belt somewhere. That's another story. But the interstellar ship is what Sean and I had talked about, that Richard said basically hangs out in the asteroid belt. And the scout ship is terrestrially based. That is about the size of a Staten Island ferry.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the primary ship that escapes the Earth's atmosphere and then moves out to the larger ships. But that's
now who's on, who's excuse me, Clay, who's, which group is on these ships? Whose ships are these?
The Silicon species, the conformers.
The same
that's one. Ships.
All right.
Same ones. Hey Sean, go back to your timeline so that we can stay
sure.
on point
well,
there
I
and
just
not
just
digress.
I want to hit one point. When Rich's first off-world mission happened, that was under the auspices of control of the Air Force. Not the Department of Air Force, but the Air Force, okay? It was a TDY, temporary duty. When he came back, his involvement with this switched from Air Force to Navy. Now, it's instructive that when it went over to Navy, you're now in the policy end of things. You're also in the diplomatic end of things. So one of the reasons why Rich had gone off world was the first time was to interact with the quote unquote some sort of ambassadorial VIP element. So it's the program was moving into a policy phase. So then at that point the Navy took over. Is that correct, Clay?
That's correct, exactly.
Okay, so we're going from 08 to mid 09, and so we get our intel friend involved in this. And so, you know, he's a scientist as well as, you know, medical, and so he's gonna start checking up on things.
What does that mean?
He's gonna try to verify, because he has clearances, he's gonna try to verify exactly what
Rich's story?
Rich's story is true, or it's all BS.
Right.
And Rich himself.
I'm sorry?
And Rich himself. It was checking Rich's bonus.
Okay, your intel guy is not a friend of Rich's. You know
he
him.
Is. And, he, and is. Not at that
not, at, not at that time. All right.
No.
But he said, made it clear to you that he was going to go after this story to try to figure it out. Okay? All right.
Right. Okay. So that when we get into the period of time where Rich meets Maccabee on base, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's an issue for our intel friend because he's a federal officer. So if he's presenting credentials that are not authentic, that's a crime. That's a national security risk. So it was his duty. And he even told Richard this. He goes, it's my duty to report you. And I'm going to do that. And Rich just chuckled and he said, go ahead.
This is at their first meeting?
No, that was at a meeting probably well into 09. When did Rich meet Maccabee Clay?
That was in 08. That was the spring of 08 before he got pulled out of it. Yes, at Dahlgren.
Right. Correct.
Can we do this once again? Why did he see Dr. Bruce Maccabee, and what was accomplished by such a meeting?
Well, I think it was probably a confirmation thing. Morningstar felt very strongly because you know he really needs to meet Maccabee. Maccabee has the clearances. I think part of us, Clay and I, were saying, well, hell, if he can get on base, you know, that validates who he is. At least he has clearances, right?
Here's why. Here's part of the reason why is that Dr. Maccabee is a scientist and a very good one at that, from what I understand, at Dahlgren.
Right.
And Rich is mathematically inclined, that's to say the least, and as electronic warfare operations specialist, for all you military guys out there, please just excuse me if I don't get the tag correctly. But Richard also served at SLAC, going back in his when he enlisted in the Navy for 6 months and studied under Richard Feynman, who was a visiting professor from Caltech at Stanford.
Feynman.
So Rich had Feynman. And Rich had a great propensity for math. He still does, obviously. But so Bob Morningstar realized that they had a lot in common. And also, he knew that Bruce Maccabee, Dr. Maccabee, was involved in laser optics and the Aegis radar system, and our guy's been heavily involved in that type of research or has experience, especially being in the Navy and dealing with it. And that was the main point, one of the main points they spoke about for 3.5 hours at Dahlgren, was about the Aegis system. So Bob rightly, intuitively knew that those two would have a lot to talk about on that issue, and that both were in the Navy setting, Rich being Navy and a civilian with high clearances, Dr. Maccabee, they would be able to talk plainly and bluntly.
What did this have to do with the mission, though, per se, with Rich's mission? They're talking about Aegis, laser optics. Okay. What did that to do with the actual mission, the off-planet mission?
Hold on, you're getting ahead of yourself a little, Jeff, and it's understandable. He is not off-world at this time.
No,
this
I'm
before he
yes,
was pulled
yes.
out of that program. But
yes,
he knew it was part of what Bob was doing, and I give Bob a lot of credit, is that he was putting in contact with somebody very reputable in ufology that would be able, who has clearances, would be able to verify that indeed he had met Rich with being getting on the base and having those clearances. So it was kind of like
so a Maccabee, Morningstar, and Rich, there's three parts of this story, right?
Part of it, yes, correct.
Okay
so I just want to add one thing. So
yeah.
this was after the February UN meeting, And that it was also part of validating, because we started getting information about the UN meeting in the February UN meeting. So it was our way of putting Richard in contact with a reputable scientific person involved in ufology.
Which is Robert Morningstar. Okay.
No, which
no,
was
no, which is Bruce McAfee.
Bruce
McAfee.
Bruce, all right. How did Bob? How did Robert Morningstar get involved then?
Bob was brought in. Bob knew us well before we met Richard. We've been involved in the interest of the subject, and we got to know Bob. And at that point, we brought Bob in because before the UN release information, we were asked, "Okay, guys, do you know have any contacts out there who would be able to put out that?" We were going to meet at the February 12th, 2008 UN meeting. So yeah, we know a couple. Bob Morningstar at UFO Digest and Michael Sala at Exopolitics. He said, okay, don't tell him until the 12th after the meeting, and then you guys can release that information, and then we'll go from there.
I will also add one thing. We met Bob after the Culture of Contact seminar in New York City in the summer of 07, I believe. And so Bob had reached out to us because that's when we first introduced our Rich's version of the Special Operation Manual 1-01. So that's what piqued Morningstar's interest with us, and then we established a relationship. And then from there, Morningstar connected us and Rich with McAfee.
Okay. All right. Good. Got it.
Okay.
Yep. Next.
So. Now, at one point, yeah, I think there are a few markers here that we have to look at. Number one, our intel friend is going to do his duty and verify.
So he's going to try and vet Rich and the whole program, the mission, the works.
He's trying to figure it out.
No mean feat, because this is so compartmentalized. But okay, if Rich is out there trying to put this information forward through you guys, the intel guy would have a direct ringside seat to the genesis of it, at least. And then where does he go? I guess he goes into his world of black and dark and starts digging around.
Sure. He also goes in the world of what he calls the ants, which is NCIS and the FBI.
Okay.
Now, he goes to NCIS and he presses hard, doesn't get an answer. He goes back to NCIS and they go, oh, this guy's a fraud. He's, you know, he's nobody. He's got fake IDs. He hits blogs about what to wear as uniforms, blah, 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 blah. So our intel friend goes, uh-huh. So then he goes to the FBI multiple times. He said, I want this guy arrested. Aren't you interested in finding out whether or not this guy is going into secure bases with fake ID? And they turned to him with the great chagrin and says, we're not interested. Thank you very much. He said, but that's a crime. They go, there's nothing we can do.
All right.
And it was shut off at that point. Okay. So now we're started getting into the complexity of what we're looking at.
Now we are, just for our listeners, we're getting to something called fail safe, which is the crux of the issue that we're going to talk about tonight. So let's move as quickly as we can toward that, because we're going to need to spend some time on it.
Well, this is part of fail safe. Part of fail safe is that the intel friend has a very difficult time reverse engineering who Richard is. And what he does, he's getting half validation notes. He can't quite figure it. At one time, much later, I said to my intel friend, I'm like, you know, what's your impression after all this? He goes, it kind of reminded me of Burrish, because I really dug in deeply with Burrish. And there were tiny things about Dan Burrish that were absolutely authentic and things that were absolutely false.
I've spent a lot of time with that story.
Yeah. So, this is what that our intel friend, he had to work through.
But Sean, your intel friend is working essentially as an independent. He's autonomous. He's not
That's correct.
Under control or being guided. He's He's doing his own thing.
No, he's as far as Clay and I have always been aware of, he's completely independent with the clearances to look up the dress of this.
So he's a freelancer within the Intel community, I guess. That's what you're saying? Or was he dispatched to look into you guys without you knowing it?
Doubtful.
Okay.
And I'm saying that after knowing the guy for almost 10 years.
The story of Rich having, in his mind, the Intel guy, false credentials, gaining access to secure bases, bothered him, and he didn't like that. It almost sounds like it would drive him up the walls. I get the idea. I understand. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
I'll say this is that not only are you correct, and I applaud you for saying that, Jeff, but it's like no one likes to be told that they don't have the clearances to get into somebody else's clearances.
Right. Okay.
No,
all right. Onward, Sean.
All the while, Rich is trying to make efforts to make contact with the White House from autumn of 2009 into early 2010.
All right. Now I have to ask you to pause. I want you to explain who gave him this task and how he apparently not pulling rank, pulling position, using influence, went about trying to contact President Obama. We need some background on this.
Clay, you might have a better recollection of it.
Yeah,
I don't.
Okay, first of all,
who told him to contact Obama? Where'd that order come from? I don't need names.
Nope. I told you guys in the last interview that in 2008, the Navy, not the U.S. Navy, the Navy had a very unique opportunity to explore the subject of UFOs, UAPs, and God knows what other program.
Right.
And we had one admiral was the head of CENTCOM, one that was the head of OONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, and one who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Great liberties can be taken when you have that type of firepower. Who can manage and sweep if something something happens
which
can compromise
right there,
the program.
So I'm going to stop you right there. Hold on. Now, those three people, we do not know, were briefed. We only know that the services at that part were all Navy.
All right. Let me go back to my question, though. You just indicated that he had been told to contact the White House. Now, I asked who gave him those orders, and then I asked how did he propose to go about doing this? And I think a lot of people out there would like to know. Does he knock on the
Howard
White
Blum,
House gate?
Howard,
what does he do?
Howard Blum wrote a book, what was the name of the book, where he talks about a Navy working group. Remember, Navy's in charge of policy. Rich is a part of a working group pushing forward this agenda. But the key to understand this, and this is driven into our heads.
But it was William. It was William Blum. Is called Rogue State.
Yeah.
Called what?
No, not Rogue State. It's William Blum. I know you talk about it. It's the other book. Not Rogue State.
All right. Go ahead.
But it was driven in our heads that Rich had great autonomy. He said to us, always, he said, there's not many of us out there. We have great autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
He used to say this all the time to us. Hey, I eat a lot of SH, you know what, but I can move sideways where very few people can.
But we got to stay on topic here. His mission is to make contact with President Obama in the White House.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Tell me more about that. How did he go about that? What were the parameters? What, and if he knows the JCS and ONI, those guys can pick up the phone and get to the president. So tell me what
it can't be official. It cannot be an official brief.
Oh, no, I didn't say they were going to brief him. I'm just saying entree.
So you wouldn't have, what I'm saying is you wouldn't have an officer representing a department of anything contacting the White House about this. It's outside.
But there are 100 different ways to get an entree channel set up without sticking your name or reputation there. And I'm just curious as to how they expected Rich, without this, to get to the president.
Well, that was a very interesting story itself, Clay.
Sorry, but okay, Jeff. First of all, there's a lot of presuppositions here that it's easy to get the president. It is not easy.
Who said that?
No, not you, Jeff. Not you. But people make that assumption. Sometimes when you're in the company, you go through certain proper channels. Let's look at Dahlgren. One reason why McAbee had to be careful was that when the ants or you or anybody started digging, hey, how did this guy get on the base? What invariably happens is that if there's an investigation, they start going through all the books. Who came in? Who did what? Who did this?
Yeah, of course, it's all recorded. It's all audio, video, digital.
Sometimes there are certain people who don't want to be noticed coming in. And all of a sudden, you're digging into that area where...
We're still getting away from the issue here. And the issue is, how does he propose, how does he tell you when he talks to you about this, that he's going to get to the president? I know it's not easy. I'm just curious about how he's tasked to do this. So what is he thinking? What am I going to do? Set up a lemonade stand on the sidewalk outside the gate and hope he gets noticed?
No.
So how does he do it?
It's the very same guy who escorted John McCain's wife into the White House. His mother. His mother.
Who's the very same guy? I'm sorry.
This is Rich. I'm talking about Rich.
Rich escorted John McCain's mother into the White House.
Into the White House at one point way back. We talked about that.
All right.
It's not like once you have clearances or this familiarity or you have an access, you can get into certain places. It doesn't mean you can get to the target, but you can get into certain places, and that's the issue with Rich. So Rich was tasked with his consent, because he has autonomy, and through the working group, to try to speak and get to Obama.
Okay.
And it took 12 to 13 times to do this. Some in civvies and some in uniform.
Were these attempts directed to the White House as the venue? Is that where he went
No, it could be a podunk Martha's Vineyard if you can do it.
Golf course, whatever. Okay.
Yeah, you
could be when Obama comes into the UN.
So he's got to track Obama, he's got to know where he is, he's got a plan, an avenue that he's going to pursue to try to physically get close enough to the president to do what?
Well, here's the thing, is that to get to him, but this is why Trump goes to Mar-a-Lago. He doesn't go to the White House. Too many eyes. There's too many plants. There's too many precautions. There's security measures. It's too cumbersome. So you get them.
You wanted to plant. To answer Jeff's question, you wanted to plant the information about specific information about this particular program.
And so he wanted to get. He wanted a face-to-face, like a 90-second chat with Obama, Mr. President, blah 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 and blah. And you need to know about blah, blah.
It was about passing a contact information for Obama to eventually find out.
Oh, here, Mr. President, Bill Smith, telephone number. You need to contact this guy about...
It slipped in his pocket.
I'll go. He got Rich slipped by the Secret Service.
So Rich gave a piece of paper to the Secret Service, and they went up and stuck it in Obama's pocket.
Let me explain, please. Let me just hit it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it took 13 times to get to him. However, doesn't matter. If he can got to him, if Obama was kissing babies with lollipops, and he could slip him a card, he'd do it. It's looking for that opportunity.
Who slipped him the card?
Mr. President, before, without Secret Service being around. Mr. President, here's a card. So please do me a favor. Get in contact with this number. We want to talk to you about a program. Boom.
And the Secret Service is not around?
Nope, they are around. He got past them.
The
Sean, let me finish. The Secret Service, he got past them. He was in a bathroom, and when he got out, the Secret Service came in. At that point, after Rich had slipped the card, and they said to him, he said, "Hey, man, you're good. You got bias." And that was it. Done.
Well, in the meantime,
got briefed by the program.
In the meantime, Obama could have been dead on the bathroom floor, potentially.
No. Because everybody, because we can speculate on this, everybody in that entire area had already been vetted. Got it? So there wasn't a security risk.
So the Secret Service was they were lax.
The immediate venue, yes, in the immediate venue of where Obama was.
All right. So Rich was accepted as a vetted insider in a specific environment where it had the president going into the restroom. He went into the restroom as well and was able to give Obama a card with some contact data on it.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'll tell you how good he was. He was being followed by security prior to this. Okay.
Right.
And so that security, they weren't briefed, so they could be part of it. So Rich had to go over to the east side, but he had to lose these guys. So he jumped on the A train, which is a train that runs up the west side of Manhattan, and he goes up to 50th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 50th Street has two lines, one below and one up. So Rich was able to go to 50th Street. He runs upstairs and takes a downtown train down. He was able to lose these guys. You really have to know New York to do that. I go, "Oh, you went to 50th Street." He goes, "Yep."
Why were they following him at this point in time? Do you know?
Yes, I do, because he was going to meet Obama at some point. I don't know if this is number 9 or number 10 or 13. I don't know.
So he's on a watch list.
Yes.
Okay.
So to speak, but we don't know who the security is. So when he got on the train uptown and lost those security guys, they lost their principal. They're supposed to follow him. Now, I don't know who these security people are. So when he comes in to my place of work and sat down, he says, "Listen," he's dressed in a bow tie. He's dressed immaculately in civvies. He says, I can't stay long. I got to go meet POTUS. And I said, "Wow, are you kidding me?" He says, "Nope." I said, I got to try to get to POTUS and speak with him. Speak with him, meaning give him the card, probably. So he wasn't there about 20 minutes before a phone call came in, and he says, "Okay, I got to leave." So he leaves. Now, this is a Monday night, and he leaves the establishment on this avenue. I'm not going to name it because I don't need the trolls showing up at my work.
Uh-huh.
He leaves, and there's no vehicles parked on the street whatsoever. But at my 2 o'clock position across the street, I see a minivan with two guys in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at my place, and sure enough, Rich leaves. He exits left. He heads east, which he's heading to the heliport on 34th Street, by the way. And I watch these guys. They see me. They see me. I see them, and I don't move. I don't stare at them. I just don't move. And they're waiting for me to move because they got to tail him. I don't move. So they make an illegal U-turn. And the guy in the passenger seat, as a U to go away from, to drive away from me, he hides his head. And they immediately follow Rich. It's the security detail that he lost uptown that's there to monitor him.
So they recovered him at your place of business.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. They you don't lose these guys. They know where he's going. It's just it's a law of averages.
Right.
Well, it's
okay.
Like, you know, hold on. Who's this guy going to see? They'll probably go see the Pickering. So, all right. Meet him up
down
here.
Yeah, I got it. We have to pause here. We're running real late here, but I got to take my little bit of a break here at the top of the hour. We'll come right back. Another hour to go. So let's get this card. We've got the card passed off to the president. Not quite. We need to tie that up a little bit and then move on from there. We got to get into fail safe, the next hour. All right. The story is talk about amazing little pieces of minutiae, turns and twists and all kinds of contours and textures. It's quite complicated. Back with more in just a few minutes.